Hey everybody, and welcome to the show. I'm James, that's Katie, and that makes this the first ever episode 19 of Cloud Control. And wow, there has been some big news this morning, everybody. I feel like the last episode I threw it to you right away because, Kate, you had something to tell everyone, and I think this is another time I'm going to do that right now because you have something I'm just over the moon about because I can finally talk to someone about it, Kate. I finally can talk to you about this.
You know what? I completely understand how you feel. I don't know how you've waited this long. I'm indebted to you because, yeah, I think we sat down to record this. We're about half an hour late sitting down from when we said because I was in the middle of completing God of War Ragnarok, finally, and I have done so, and holy shit, like, my heart is still racing, I think, for having beaten that game.
It's quite the finale. It's quite the finale.
Oh, man. It's not only the finale, the last like 6 hours are just like popping off. Like, it is nonstop action and excitement and intrigue, and like, it is tense. I did not know what was going to happen, who was going to make it out, like what kind of conflict resolution strategy was going to win out. So I think what we've agreed is we're going to dedicate a proper episode upcoming to the end of God of War and overall God of War Ragnarok closing thought, but just in the interest of holy shit, it just happened and I have to talk about it.
Exactly.
I beat it. So overall,
exactly. Hang on. Just before we get into that, I just want to lay the land of the show for everyone.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
Yeah. No. It's okay. It's exciting. I mean, my brain is still frazzled from finishing that game like a month ago. So I can only imagine. I don't even know how you're here right now, but collecting your thoughts. You're putting words together like reasonably well. So I understand. But yeah, everyone, this is the 19th episode. Like I said, we are going to talk about the Nintendo Direct that just happened a couple of days ago. There was a lot of announcements there. So we're going to recap that for you. And I've actually played the Sea of Stars demo as well that was announced at that Direct. So we'll talk about those after Kate goes through her impressions on Ragnarok, I guess. But yes, we will be doing a full-on spoiler cast talking about everything God of War Ragnarok, hopefully within the next couple of weeks, so look out for that. One other thing to look out for as well on our channel right now is we are reviewing every episode of The Last of Us HBO series, which has been fantastic, and probably the, you know, aside from God of War, that's what you should be spending your time on. So go watch that show if you haven't already and catch up with our review series going on as well, if you're so inclined. So with all that being said, let's transition right back to God of War, Kate. What else do you want to say about the game? And again, this is going to be spoiler free for now. High level thoughts. Like, what else do you want to say?
I mean, I don't think there could have been a better sequel to 2018. I think like this is like, I guess it's technically on PS4 as well, but this to me is like a game you buy a PS5 for easily. One of the most polished games I've ever played, like probably some of the best mocap and voice acting that's ever been in video games. Like there were multiple points during this ending part where I had a little bit of a cry, like for completely like unique separate characters, just because like at the end, it really is such an insane ensemble cast you have put together, and just so many of the little pieces that all pop up at the end, and everybody's got a job and everybody's got something that they're resolving, and it really ties up, I think, all of the threads that 2018 sets up in addition to all the things that you've gone through in this newest edition. And like, it's just so clean. Like, very rarely do I think you run into a game where the consistency stays throughout the entire experience, and I can really say that Ragnarok is one of the few games where I genuinely feel that way. Like, the ending is obviously the most exciting. There's a bunch of amazing, bombastic, spectacle boss fights you get to play through. There's emotional beats, there's tension, there's huge crazy twists that honestly I'm still reeling from like 5 hours of gameplay ago. So the crazy shit that happens near the end of the game. But yeah, it's phenomenal, the level of like detail and quality that went into this game. And I think the other thing I want to say on it that really blew me away, and probably one of the biggest takeaways from Ragnarok as opposed to like big story beats, is just the level and the variety of the environments that you go through. Like, you visit all of the realms in this game, whereas I think 2018 was missing two or three. And you go back there and you go back multiple times, and just how different they are. Like, you go to Muspelheim a few times near the end, and I don't think I've ever really thought a fire level looked good, you know? Like,
yeah,
they're never
most,
they're never your favorite area. Like, they're just sort of always kind of bland.
Yeah, but by the time you get to the fire area too, you're like, oh shit, this is gonna be hard. Like, I'm just here to kill this, like, demon thing that's here, and I'm gonna leave. Watch out for the lab.
But not in this game. Like, it was gorgeous. Like, right, the last time you go there where you meet someone, you know the one, James.
I know who you're talking about.
Like, that area, I took so many screenshots. It's beautiful. And I went to send them to someone, and then I saw, like, you know, the beautiful forests of Vanaheim, and then there's, like, the icy areas with all, like, the bones of those giant monsters, and then you've got, like, when you...
What is that sound in the background?
That's Neville. That's Neville. He's chewing on his mouse. He was inspired by, he played God of War all the way through with me. He was there for every moment. We have our God of War controller. He's the little wolf. I'm the big wolf on it. It was his birthday present. We played it all. So he's just, he's, you know, he's got a lot of feelings about the game. He's getting them out on his little toy mouse. So sorry about that, everyone.
You know, just to build off what you're saying about the environments too and how they're all so well realized, I think my overall comment about the game, if we're making, like, generalized non-spoilery comments, would just be applying the same thing to each of the characters. And I know that we talk a lot about, like, you know, Atreus and Mimir and Freya and all the main kind of faces you see throughout the game consistently, but I even feel that can apply to, like, all, like, the cast almost in its entirety is every character is fleshed out beyond the level with which you'd expect for, like, how important they are. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you understand everyone's motivations. I can even tell you about, like, that other blacksmith, the third dwarf Linda? That you meet. Like, that, what was her name again?
Linda.
I just claimed I could tell you about her, but, like, I forgot her name.
You don't even know her name.
But you know what I mean? Like, she's probably the most throwaway character in the game. Like, she's just there because, like, you need someone to man the forge when Brock and Sindri are off doing, like, story sort of quests. And even her, like, they didn't have to put any detail into why she's there or who she is, but she just has, like, this abundance of dialogue lines, and you get to know her in a way, you know, and you get to know all these areas, you get to know all the characters, and it just feels so intimate as a game, despite being such an epic scale in terms of, like, the stakes. And that's what I love the most about it. Like, it's like when people, you know, or I would imagine, like, people that really love, like, war movies and stuff, it's not the war they're there for, it's, like, the character interactions within that context. And this is, like that to me, the way that you get to just know these people in this dire situation.
Yeah, it's amazing how they balance the two as well, because God of War is a franchise, you think back to the original three games, they're so spectacle, right? Like, there's basically, like, zero character, like, motivation or, like, you know, interaction in that game. And 99% of the time when Kratos came across someone, it was to kill them. Like, it was not driven largely by story. Like, they did a good job with the myths and realizing the world, but it was very much like a combat focused game. And God of War Ragnarok still has that. Like, it's some of the coolest set pieces I've played in a long time. Some of the biggest boss fights, some of, like, the stakes are, yeah, they're, like, world breaking. But at the same time, it manages to make those feel important while also having a moment where, like, you're going to sit down and have a group meal. And that's like the tensest, most exciting thing that you've done in your session is sit down and watch them have lunch together. It is just amazing how they manage to balance both of those things and make it feel so, like, natural and so well paced the entire time.
So do you see yourself now going back and sort of completing the rest of the side missions and going for 100%, or, like, where are you at with Ragnarok?
So there is still a final thing I have to do, like, kind of like in 2018 where you go back to the house after. There's definitely, like, a post-game event, probably like a second ending I need to go experience that I just didn't have time for today, and that's extremely high on the list.
Highly recommend that to anyone that has not done, if you've beaten the game, I would assume you've done that, but do it if you haven't.
I think that is, like, should be a requirement to say you've beaten the game. So maybe I've just lied to you this entire last 20 minutes. I haven't beaten Ragnarok.
Yeah, well, there's about another 30 minutes of credits that roll after you do that as well, so you're not done yet.
Yeah, so I will definitely be going back to do that. And we'll see. Like, well, there I might pick off a few more side quests. Like, there were some interesting areas, especially near the end of the game with the pool and some various stuff that I could do. But the priority is definitely the story, and there's a million other games to play. So I might go back every now and again and kind of tick off a few boxes. But I definitely feel like it's always bittersweet, right? Like, the breath of fresh air, like, I did it. There's the satisfaction. I'm done. I know what happened to these characters. I have closure and catharsis. But I'm also sad that it's gone. But I'm also excited to move on to the next thing. That's the rub, isn't it?
It's so sad when you finish. I think I'm going to go back now, too, and try and play some more of the side stuff, because we're planning the spoiler cast. I want to get myself back in. And I had set you completing the story as my marker to, like, go back and we'll see if I can create time. You know, there's 100 things to placate. And there's only more coming out, too, because of the Nintendo Direct, of course, and everything shown in that. So we'll transition to that now, unless you had any burning last statements you wanted to make about God of War. Yep. But you know what? We're going to save everything else. Or go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say Kratos' adage, don't be sorry, be better.
One of the best quotes I've ever heard in my life. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, we'll wrap up the rest of our thoughts, go all into the spoiler stuff, and talk about everything God of War next time we bring it up on our spoiler section. So look out for that in the future. But for now, we have a huge topic to go over, because we just had, I guess it's like the first big gaming presentation, you'd call it, of the year, which is Nintendo's first Direct for February. And they showed quite a lot here at this show. So we're here to break it all down and recap it today for you. Of course, we usually do listener mail at the end of the show, where we like to write in, get people to write in and answer some listener questions for us. But today we've changed it up a little bit, and we actually have decided to put our listener interaction here, because we put out a poll just to see what everyone in our community thought about the Direct. Interestingly enough, the majority of respondents for the poll, which is on Twitter right now if you want to go vote, although I guess it'll be closed by the time you're listening to this episode, most people seem to think it was excellent, which is leading the way at 66%. And then we have good and fine both tied in second place. No one thought it was lacking, luckily enough. So that's always nice to hear that no one was disappointed. But yeah, what do you think of this? Would you say your feelings are in line with the poll here, or where are you at for the Direct?
Yeah, I think in terms of objectively how the Direct went, it's in that excellent category. I think for myself personally, it's in that good category. Like, there just wasn't any game that struck me as like, oh, that's a day one purchase, I'm so excited. Although there were definitely a few good surprises. And overall, I think really nice, high quality Direct. And I totally see why people are excited for what's coming up with Nintendo.
Yeah, I think I'm in probably the same boat. I think there was a few things for me that were, they were like, oh, I do want to play that for sure. Like, so I think I'm probably a little higher on it than that, but I totally see why this is excellent. And, you know, Nintendo before this, they said it's going to be, you know, focused on stuff coming out the first half of this year. They delivered on that. Most of the stuff is for the first half of this year. There was a few other things thrown in as well. But what I really liked about this Direct overall was we actually got to see some of those, like, bigger Nintendo franchise that people have been waiting for a long time, like games you just, you know, that have been in the rumor mill forever. And they may not be 100% for me, but it's like, if you're judging the presentation based on what's being shown, I think this is what Nintendo people were looking for sure. Yeah, like, this was good. So
and I think that takes us perfectly into the first game we opened up here with Pikmin 4, which, oh my god, Pikmin fans, raise your hands to the sky and praise whatever god came about and influenced Nintendo to finally make this game for you poor people.
Yeah, this one's been talked about just forever. And I remember we saw that little teaser of it last year when it was kind of like that false reveal of like, this is a mobile game. Oh, wait, no, it's Pikmin 4. And I drafted Pikmin 4 in my Fantasy Critic League this year, so very happy to see it's got a release date. And I think this looks pretty good, honestly. I've played Pikmin 1 like a little bit. I'm, you know, not super experienced, but I would like to play this. I don't know if I'll, you know, it comes to this Nintendo problem. It's like, do I want to play it for $79.99? Which I think I do, but depends what else is coming out. But I think this looks good.
Yeah, I think it looks great. It's a super cute trailer. It's super weird. It's very Pikmin. My thoughts on it are like, I'm probably going to play Tinykin and that'll satisfy me. But I mean, this looks great. Pikmin are cute. The little new dog character is adorable. And I love the environment in Pikmin, right? Like, it's just such a cute little, like, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids kind of world. And they have those binoculars they find. They're all carrying them around. And there's definitely a certain charm that Pikmin has that no other game really, like, emulates.
Yeah, 100%. And what I think is cool about Pikmin, too, like, is just it goes for kind of like a photorealism sort of look with its environments a little more than other Nintendo stuff. And it's cool to see them try and it's got a very unique style compared to other Nintendo games, and I'm interested to see what that ends up looking like, because it is the Switch. You know, we've had a lot of, there's always the discussions going on about the power of the console and whatnot, but at the same time, like, sometimes Nintendo can just do it. Like, sometimes it just turns out and it looks great. So interested to see how it turns out for sure. After that, we had Xenoblade Chronicles 3, the expansion pass, which I'm sure is very exciting for Xenoblade people. A lot of anime titties and stuff going on, of course, but Xenoblade, you know, that's just how it is. And I mean, by all accounts, people love this game for what it is, so I'm glad for that. But I'm assuming you're the same boat as me in terms of your Xenoblade thoughts.
Yeah, I watched a really good video essay online that maybe I should link on Twitter about like sexism in video games, and they use Xenoblade as like the basis for their whole essay, and it was really well thought out, and it was just a really like enlightening and like interesting listen to. So I'm gonna track that down. It's been a while, but that is basically my interaction with the Xenoblade franchise. Like, I'm sure they're great games. I'm sure there's a lot of other good things going for them. Like, they're popular for a reason.
Yeah.
But man, oh man, is some of their character design just a little, I would say, dated.
I know. It's so unfortunate because the series gets so much praise in like so many other ways. But it's just being, in my opinion, like held back so much by those type of designs. Similar to like Danganronpa in a way, we ranked those characters last time too. And it's like, those games are so phenomenal, but they'd be even a higher tier above if they just removed that like, oh my God, women have boobs, like sort of thing from, you know, it's just annoying. Anyway, Samba de Amigo, a game which I don't think comes across as very sexualized, but this is a brand new...
I sure hope not. That would be a wild twist.
It would really be. This is actually a dating sim.
You get matched up with other people online based on your dancing preferences.
Based on how good you are at dancing. Yeah, this is, you know, this is a game that's going to be crippled by Nintendo Online because the concept is cool. Like, it's a rhythm game. You're kind of... It's sort of along the same lines as, like, Dance Dance, what's it called? Just Dance.
Dance Revolution.
I mean, you're hitting like, it's like a rhythm game. You're dancing with your maracas. It's a cool idea. There's like a battle royale mode they showed off, which is, I think that's a cool idea. Like, I would like to play Guitar Hero Battle Royale and see if I can last on the guitar. But I just think this is going to be crippled by Nintendo's online. And unfortunately, like, you know, it's just logistics.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, I think it looks like a cute game. I would love to sit down and play it for a couple afternoons, but... I don't know if anyone's going to be talking about Amigo Party Central in like 2 months after it's been released.
Yeah.
Fashion Dreamer. You know, the other thing to say too. I was going to say it's kind of like kids focused.
Sure, yeah.
As well,
we're maybe not the audience.
To criticize, like, you know, it's a game for kids.
It's a fun party game. Yeah. I know, like, yeah, sure. Fashion Dreamer, sure. Kate, how do you feel about this? Are you going to become a fashionista?
Well, you see, the thing is that I secretly love playing fashion in video games. But
I see this is the moment you've got to get Dark Souls worked into the podcast here.
That's right, baby. We got Dark Souls, Fashion Souls. What's better? I was playing some Destiny last night, and I will be honest, we did not load into a mission in Destiny before I had the right shaders on my outfit to look super cool and match my like glowing purple helmet. So I fucking love fashion video games, but I love it in a game I'm enjoying playing, not just fashion time.
Now, I just want to tell you that the ability to become a fashion influencer is something that we probably don't have in real life. You could live out that dream in Fashion Dreamer. So just think about it, okay? Think about it. So Dead Cells is getting more DLC. This is the Return to Castlevania DLC, and I think we'd seen this before. At a different show.
We got that beautiful animated trailer, if you remember. I think it was back at the Game Awards. The most gorgeous trailer you've ever seen. But this one's cool, a little bit more gameplay focused than just animation. And like, geez, it looks so good. Like, I want to get back into Dead Cells. There's been a few DLCs previous to this one that I've not picked up. And like, just man, oh man, the amount of stuff they've thrown in, like areas, weapons, Dracula's a boss fight. Like, it's just so cool.
Dead Cells becoming games as a service here is getting so much DLC these last little while.
Honestly, yeah, I think so. But like, a second a bundle goes on sale, I'm sniping that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, yeah, it's just a match made in heaven, right? Like the style mm-hmm. of Dead Cells with Castlevania. I think it's going to be good for sure. Mm-hmm. Tron Identity. I don't know how you feel about this one. I don't know really anything about the Tron universe, but I know Bethel Games. I've actually played Subsurface Circular on the Switch. Is kind of like a launch title, sort of a narrative adventure with some light sort of puzzle solving. And so I liked that mm-hmm. game for what it was. I wouldn't say it was groundbreaking or anything. So I know this one obviously has more budget behind it, having like a name like Tron, I guess, but I just don't know anything about Tron.
Yeah, I agree. Tron is just like, it's one of those things that doesn't really exist. Like, do we really know anyone who's into Tron?
I think we're too young, Kate. I think we're too young. It's like an 80s movie or something.
Maybe that's the problem. I mean, those bikes are cool, I guess. It's not a racing game, though, so.
No. I mean, there's lots of politics in the world of Tron. That's the thing.
Is there?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm very Tron ignorant is what I've learned, because I just thought you get on bikes, you race around, it's bright, it's cool, it's
yeah,
fun.
Yeah.
It's like Highlighters kind of style.
Yeah, and that's a fun game. Maybe I mean, Neopets had a game like that, if you remember.
That's right, and I've got my fill of that, so I don't know if Tron Identity is where I'm going next.
Okay. Can I interest you in Ghost Trick Phantom Detective?
You can interest me in Ghost Trick Phantom Detective, actually. This looks cool. This is another one of those kind of like Phoenix Wright sort of series, if I'm
yeah,
not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah. Now, this is a remake of a game from the DS era, which I had a friend that played this, and it is such a cool concept, and I was just shocked to see this come back. I'd totally forgotten about this game, mm-hmm. and then it's one of those like, oh yeah, I totally remember watching my friend play this like in middle school when he came over, and we were like huddled over his DS, like watching over his shoulder kind of thing. Cool concept, though.
Yeah, so even the characters look very Phoenix, right? Like that girl who's the... Or she looks mm-hmm. maybe something out of Professor Layton, which is kind of what I associate those two so much since they did that crossover. But yeah, this is cool. It's always been a series I've sort of been interested in, never gotten into. So like, maybe this is a good entry point.
Yeah, it's a cool concept too. Like, you're a spirit and you can take over different things in the environment and move it around. It's just a different way to explore like that murder mystery visual novel style. So I'm mm-hmm. always down for games like this. I would like to play it a lot. So yeah, it's on the radar for sure. Speaking of on the radar, I am so excited for Deca Police. This game is, I mean, who knows if it's going to be good, first of all. Let's just say these games can be a little hit and miss. I mean, we'll see about it, but the concept, at least, is very interesting. Level 5 is, of course, making some games that I really like. These characters all have, like, the most intense eyebrows in the world, by the way. They're all, like, the main character, at least, just looks so, like, he looks like they're drawn on, like, angry eyebrows. Like, I don't really know about
he
that.
He does.
But the concept is neat. Like, it's open world. You're sort of solving solving crimes, and you have this team, it looks like. And in the trailer, it's kind of like your character is collecting evidence, and you kind of have these different skill sets on your teammates. Like, they're good at analyzing different aspects, I guess, and you can sort of give the evidence to them and get them to analyze it as part of your, like, police team as you're going around. And there's obviously combat and some kind of turn-based style. It's hard to tell really from this trailer exactly what that's going to operate like, but, you know, solving a mystery with turn-based combat and like a cool cast and, you know, everyone's got their own specialty. That's like my type of shit. And yeah, mm-hmm. I'm very much got my eye on this.
Yeah, this is one of those games I'm not going to let myself get too excited because, like you said, they're really kind of hit and miss. Like, it's tough to know based off of the trailer, like, how it's going to stand out and where it's going to carve its own niche. But like, I'm watching this, I'm like, oh, cool. It's like Digimon Cyber Sleuth. Oh, it's like Persona. Oh, it's kind of like Phoenix Wright. Like, it's just got so many things like jammed into the same container. Mm-hmm. And I really think it's good because, like, yeah, if it's a good mystery game, it's got good combat, like, this could be like a very Persona-y type experience. It's kind of the thing I'm looking at. Oh, I hope it's good. I hope it's good. Like, this could be like the winner of the direct.
Is a bold statement considering some of the things we have coming up. But
For me anyway, this might be.
I know. For me, I'm 100% with you too. Although, remember Level 5, everybody, because they may or may not make an appearance in just a little bit on this recap list. So let's keep that in mind, okay? And let's talk about Bayonetta Origins, Cereza and the Lost Bayonetta Demon, Origins. Which is a, what did I say? Origins?
Bayonetta Origins.
Like Origins. Origins. Cereza Origins. And the Lost Demon. It's quite a title. This game reminded me, you know what it immediately brought to my head when they sort of described the gameplay of it is Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons. I don't know if that's how it's going to control, but they're describing like one of your, they're describing you control like Bayonetta and this monster at the same time. And immediately my head was like, ooh, one's on the left stick, one's on the right. This is like Brothers, but it has combat. Fascinating way to take a series like Bayonetta and completely change it into a new genre.
Yeah, absolutely. So Bayonetta is not a series I've ever really had my eye on. I'm not even really very good with her in Smash Bros. So she's not my kind of character.
But I love that high heel that comes down and just crushes people from the roof.
That's God. Yeah, and the big fist that comes off. Like, sure, when you're playing random and you get her, she can be a lot of fun. But yeah, she's just never really been something I've been too interested in. And this doesn't look like it is going to be the game that changes that. However, I'm always really impressed when a studio takes a franchise that's pretty well established and then says, we're going to do something pretty different with it. And so I like this kind of storybook art style it's got going. Like the gameplay that looks like it's been very modified from its hack and slash roots. And I think that's awesome. Like, it's good to put your characters in something new, try something different, branch out a bit. And I respect that, but I don't know. I'll eat oranges at home maybe on the day this comes out, but I don't think I'll be playing it.
Yeah. Just a side note. I don't know if you know this, and I have no idea. Is this actually being made by Platinum? Or is it being made by they give an Bayonetta to a different studio
For this? That is a good question. And if you want to stall and go on to the next game.
Oh, I'm down to stall. I can talk about Splatoon a little bit because I love Splatoon, although I don't have Splatoon 3. They showed the Splatoon 3 DLC off here, expansion pass. And I'll say, I think this is a tale of two stories here, because for me, I didn't get Splatoon 3. I mean, it's fun to play, but I just don't play online. And I don't really think this would prioritize, other online stuff that I play when I do delegate time for that. But as an expansion pass, I think the first wave where you're getting the original kind of hub world back, I find that a little underwhelming. It seems kind of like, oh, we've been there before. I would have preferred something new. But I will say that the second part, the side order, looked quite intriguing, because I've heard people say that the single player is really where Splatoon 3 has improved itself compared to the second game. Whereas the second game, I really didn't love the single player a whole lot, where this game apparently does a much better job. And I get the impression side order looks a lot more like, a story expansion, like a single player thing. And I think that's quite exciting, because I would love to see Splatoon focus more on that single player aspect than it has in the past. So that's what I have to say about Splatoon. And now back to you, Kate, with the update on Bayonetta.
So it is Platinum Games. It is. So okay. All praise I gave them previously is maintained.
Very cool.
And as far as Splatoon 3 goes, I'm going to say the same thing I say every single time Splatoon comes into conversation. If you put split screen couch co-op in the game, I will play it.
Yes.
I am not going to buy it for online. Or a good single player campaign, which does look cool. Like those weird, creepy, void areas they go to. Like, I like the kind of weird, almost horror aspect.
There is a horror tinge to it sometimes, isn't there?
Yeah, it's a little creepy and unsettling, and I'm so down for that in my cute paint everything game. I just want to play on the couch with some friends, that's all.
Me too. And for anyone that just heard, I believe you may have been able to audibly pick up my stomach grumbling there just by the mic feedback that I'm looking at. So that's what that was. Okay. Next thing on the list, Fire Emblem Engage, the expansion pass. Neither of us have played Fire Emblem Engage. And I don't know. If you were to pick a franchise that we're both in such a weird spot with, considering how much we've historically liked it, would we mutually agree that that's Fire Emblem?
Absolutely. Fire Emblem is my biggest, if you got the stonks trend that goes steadily up, this is the opposite for Fire Emblem. It is just plummeting. I'm looking here at the characters they've announced, and look at my boy Hector, and I'm looking at him what have they done to you, Hector? Where's that beautiful 2D pixel sprite art that was so gorgeous back in FE6? And now you just looks as washed out as the franchise.
Yeah. If only we could play, I don't know. The thing about Fire Emblem is, is that I just don't know what they would need to do to make me really excited again. Because hypothetically, this should be it. I've heard everything I've heard people say about this game is like, hey, they've taken out a lot of the Sim stuff. Is it still there in some capacity? Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. But they've taken it all out compared to the Three Houses. And this is a lot more combat focused. They've gotten rid of a lot of the stuff about the combat that I didn't love as much. Like the new way that the weapon triangle works seems cool. But at the same time, I'm just like, I hate the way this looks. I hate it. I hate the art style.
I think what would get me in is if they released another 2D game that went back to like classic and not just like, oh, things were better when I was younger and like everything new shit. Like I love new stuff, but I think Fire Emblem worked better in that art style. It was so unique. It was so well done. These characters just look so generic anime to me. Like I would never look at these characters and be like, oh, that's gotta be Fire Emblem, right? Like this could be like 37 million.
Well, they all have swords though. You can tell which ones are Fire Emblem.
I don't know. Hector's got an axe, man. Hector was the cool guy with the axe. and like, you know, your boy Soren's on the left. And I think the difference too is like with old Fire Emblem, I remember really liking the characters and really enjoying the story. And I just don't really feel like there's that same level of personality coming out of these characters. Like, I don't know if it's the designs. I don't know if it's just the really like kind of not washed out, but it's very like toned down in features, you know, like none of these characters, you look at them, like really have a nose or like any kind of like a mouth. They just sort of like their hair is what's different about them. Like they're the same generic anime person, but with whatever hair they've got going on. And they just don't scream like they've got a lot of personality. And I know some people really like just a few of the Three Houses characters, but.
So my thing with Fire Emblem, though, just to challenge you a little bit, is like, I don't know if the characters have ever been that interesting in Fire Emblem. Like, I think they've just changed. Like, I think the modern games have just really highlighted how weak the characters' designs really are. Like, the modern games are all just like, oh, I love strawberries, and that's my whole personality. I'm only going to talk to you about strawberries. Or like, I'm the scared girl. I'm scared to leave my room, and I my whole story is just going to be about me coming out of my shell because of my friendship with the main character. Like, they're really one note, but I don't know if they've ever really been interesting. Like they just haven't really been as explicit about their one interest, you know. Like I don't know. And I think that's a difference too, is like I've never personally played Fire Emblem for the story in any of the games, and so I can't really comment on it too much. Like I just like the tactics, but I think where I'm at with this series is just like there's a lot of tactics games now. When I was younger, I feel like I just knew about Fire Emblem because that's the one that was like my friends played it and it was cool. But now there's like all types of tactics stuff out there, and I just don't know if Fire Emblem has the same, like, what it's giving me isn't as unique anymore.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And it's probably, like, there's an element of that for me, too. And, you know, part of maybe I enjoy the characters more, like, because of the art and how they looked. And I think the other thing, too, is that, like, my biggest complaint is the, like, Sim aspect of this. Like, you had characters that you didn't always necessarily, like, get along with the main character in the original games. And that was at least more interesting. Like I felt like when they had relationships with each other, it was like there was at least a little bit of depth to it, whereas in these new ones, like everyone has to be dateable, so you got to make sure that everybody gets along with everyone and just says like kind of vaguely positive, maybe like flirtatious things at all times just in case that's the character you chose. And like it just feels that little extra bit shallow, maybe because it's so much in the forefront of like, do you want to be friends with this character? Do you want to have lunch with them? Whereas like, you know, if another character was in that same boat in the first game, it wouldn't be so like in your face about it.
And that extends on to like the side characters too, because with the system of like you have marriages and get the child units and stuff, like all the, it's not only like they have to get along with the main character, they also have to get along with each other because you can pair them up for like marriages and stuff. So realistically, it's just this, I don't know. Like, it just seems weird. I agree with you 100%. Yeah. Anyway, this isn't a Fire Emblem bagging podcast, so let's move right along. I know a lot of people really like Engage for what it's worth, and I think it probably does solve a lot of the problems that we're talking about to some extent, but I think we're just in a bad place with the franchise right now.
I think that's very true. We're a little jaded, and in fairness, the combat looks great. Like, I'm sure it's still just a good tactics game, and if that's all you want from it, it's probably a great game.
Yeah. Okay, so after that, we saw the newest project from Don't Nod, which is, you know, the dev from Life is Strange, and this is called Harmony, the Fall of Reverie. Confusing name. I mean, interesting game, though. Like, it really focuses on the plot points and, like, how it can change the narrative of the game, and there's this big, like, tree they sort of show you about, like, oh, if you side with this character, like, they'll influence the story in different ways. And so it's kind of like, I guess that's what Don't Nod's MO is, right? Like, these narrative branching games. But this one is certainly presented a lot differently than Life is Strange.
Yeah, that's my intention. I didn't realize this was the same studio, because it seems like such a big departure. Like, it's still in that same genre, but this is, you know, it's animated. It's meant to look realistic. There's like weird magic and technology going on, which I guess the other games had a bit of that, where you could like wind back time.
There's supernatural stuff for sure.
But it wasn't like this much in the forefront. This almost looks kind of like Arcane-y in the sense of, like, you know, they've got like the spy glasses, they're like opening up portals, and like, it's kind of got a little bit of that, like, almost like steampunk, like tech magic kind of going on.
Yeah, that's a really good comparison actually, with Arcane and like this. So there's similar types of like technological advancement in a way, although this is like big cities and like people have cell phones and stuff too, so it's a little more futuristic.
Exactly. It's a little less fancy, a little bit more like, you know, grounded in society, but this looks cool. Like, I'm genuinely interested. Like, when these games hit, I absolutely adore branching narratives, like choose your path games, and like the setting alone has me curious to keep an eye on this. And even though the Life is Strange games never really stood out to me too much, like, they are, you know, so highly regarded that I trust that the writing team is going to have some really good credibility and some strong talent on the team as well.
Same boat. You know, I tried playing Life is Strange and I just didn't love moving through the world. And like, I liked the narrative concept, but I didn't like sort of how you interacted with it as much. Like, I don't know. I kind of maybe joined a little bit late and not from the start of the franchise and whatnot, but, obviously, they're so well respected in this space. And you're right, like, I'm watching this one too, for sure. Just for a different flavor on what that team can bring with a different franchise. How do you feel about Disney Illusion Island?
I feel if I'm on the team of Disney Illusion Island, I'm sad I'm not on the team for Cuphead. Because, man, I mean, this looks like a cute kids game, right? Like, there's absolutely nothing wrong with this game. If I am 8 years old, I am super stoked to play it. I am no longer 8 years old. I'm going to be playing Cuphead.
This is basically 2D Mickey Mouse Mario, without four player Mario, New Super Mario Bros. Essentially, or like Rayman, one of those games. I mean, you said it all. Let's move on. Advance Wars 1-2 Reboot Camp finally has a release date. A game which people love and cannot wait for. And by your reaction, I guess you're one of them.
I don't know if I'll necessarily play this. Like, these are games I wish I had played years ago and I never did. And I don't think I'm necessarily going to be picking this up, but it's a great franchise. I think this looks phenomenal. Like, the art is so polished. It's so cute. And I'll be honest, I watched this and I was like, man, I want to go back and play some Wargroove, because I just prefer the like fantasy style over the like, you know, build a tank unit doesn't get me going. Like, build like a mage or an archer, I'm like, ooh, really, for me? I want to go play some Wargroove later.
Okay, so after that we had, I guess potentially you could argue this is the most beautiful game in the showcase, Octopath Traveler 2. I mean, we see this art style a lot now from Square specifically, but this is just, every time you see these games, I'm not at the point where I'm sick of it yet. Like, they're just so stunning to look at. I desperately hope that this game sort of solves some of the issues with, you know, the layout and the way that the first game functioned with all the, you know, I've been through it a few times, I guess I won't rehash it, but just the way that it necessitated so much grinding to get through all the character stories and whatnot. I really hope this fixes that, because I think the original game just had so many strong aspects going for it, like the battle system and the art and the music and everything, but it just didn't quite come together. And I hope they make good on that in the redo here.
I agree. I think Octopath Traveler is a game I have my eye on, and then based on some of the negative aspects of the game, it turned me off playing it, so I never did. If they nail this one, like, I'm more than happy to join on game two. But again, like, I look at this and, like, it looks good, but you know what? Like, I kind of just think maybe I'll pick up Triangle Strategy. and obviously they're quite different in terms of how they approach the strategy genre. But like, the art style obviously puts them in, mm-hmm. you know, a bit of a comparative factor. And I'm of the two, I think that's the one I'm looking at.
I mean, what you really got to do is play Live Alive.
Yes. Yes, I really do.
So that's the one.
And hey, I'm a game free now. So
that's true.
We'll see. I've got some free time.
I would imagine if I had to bet, your free time will not be spent playing We Love Katamari Reroll and Royal Reverie.
This is a game I'm glad exists because it's just fucking weird and it brings people a lot of joy. And if I just had it in my hands, I'm sure I would have like a blast for a couple hours. I don't see myself purchasing it, however.
Yeah, I played the original version of one of the Katamari games a while ago. I don't remember if it was on Game Pass or something, but I like had access to it from something or other, and it was legitimately really fun for like a couple hours, like rolling things around. It's got a very similar energy to like Donut County or one of those games where you're doing like some ridiculous puzzle, and it's just kind of like, what the fuck is this? Like, games are so weird. And I really like that because, you know, I think games can really fall into a lot of patterns sometimes and be like, oh, it's so gritty, so realistic, all this stuff. And games like this or like Bug Snacks, you know, they're just so fucking weird and like they're just off the wall. But it just, you know, it reminds you like games can be silly sometimes and make no sense. So I really like that energy that it brings. Like Samba de Amigo, same thing. But yeah, I'm not going to be spending, you know, too much time on this realistically. But you know what? This is a nostalgia pick, though. This is one of those weird PS2 games that people are going to be... There's going to be a lot of people that are like, oh my God, Katamari, like, I have to get this.
Yeah, absolutely. They could just release the same Katamari game on just every console, and it will sell every single time. Like,
yeah, it is. I mean, this is a remake. Weird. This is a remake of Reroll, and then, yeah, whatever. Next up is Sea of Stars. We're going to skip over that, though, because I'm going to talk about it right after this from playing the demo. And we'll talk about instead Omega Strike, which is, this is that free-to-play one, right? That's like a weird air hockey thing? Yeah.
Yeah, like a three-on-three sort of like soccer, but it's also like that, like kind of right, that Windjammers game, if you remember, where you like were throwing the frisbee.
I love Windjammers.
Yeah, so this reminds me of like a three-on-three like soccer / Windjammers kind of thing.
I don't think it looks that good, to be honest. The trailer was so funny to me, too. Like, the way they zoom in these slow-mos, like, really make sure you see how you can, like, deflect the puck.
Darken the rest like, of the screen, and it's like, look exclusively here.
Yeah, it's like they really need to do everything they can to highlight. Like, someone directing this trailer was like, no, you have to make it obvious exactly how they're hitting the ball here. Like, they need to see the mechanics.
Well, you know, I think it's this. I think there's an eSport coming up.
Yeah.
For Omega Strike.
Oh, we should definitely play this for one day.
You can, Well, I think this sounds like a lot of fun to just sit on the couch for an evening. But yeah, they got the League of Legends health bars. Like, this is totally an eSport. But the weirdest thing about this trailer to me is, like, at the very end, I guess, like, when you score, like, the character portrait comes up. Because obviously it's, like, pick your character. They probably have various different stats, like, and special ability. But there's one at the end where they pop up. There's a guy, Rune, and a girl, Amy. And Rune is just, like, the most, like, jacked, like, emo edgelord I've ever seen. And then Amy is, like, some fox girl, but she's, like, standing, like, 90 degrees, like, bent over. And it looks like she's about to throw up.
I'm looking at it right now.
It's just, like, there's a lot going on in these character designs. And something about it to me is so funny because, like, I was not expecting this at the end of the trailer, just pop up with like the wildest shit.
I'm gonna main Rune.
For anyone who's, this is worth watching just for these characters, I'm gonna main Rune. He's my dude.
Well, I'm gonna play goalie and just play one of those guys that can block the net, and I think it'll be a good team. We'll win.
We'll win
some Omega Strike matches here and there.
100%, we are playing at least a few matches at this game.
Look forward to a future review, everybody. So they're releasing an Etrian Odyssey Origins collection June 1st. I'll get it for you for your birthday. I'm sure you're very interested. This is a game I've never played, but it somehow looks interesting to me. I like the concept of like going through these labyrinths and sort of you get this big grid, almost like a Minesweeper board, and you're kind of able to plot your path, like how you want to navigate through it. And it ends up being like a roguelite type of thing where you explore as far as you can, and then you're upgrading for future runs as you go through, and they're different every time kind of thing. I don't know how necessarily how all the mechanics work, but it just seems like a very everlasting gobstopper kind of game. And depending like on the variation between runs, I really think this could be one of those, like, it's just a good thing to have because you got to kill time on a flight. You could just pull up, have a run. Like it seems like a very fascinating concept to me, and a game that for a collection and something that obviously has multiple entries, like I don't know. I just really don't know anything about this series, but I find it fascinating.
Surprise too, like I'm actually kind of interested in this, and I think mostly it's the art direction. Like I really like this almost like kind of like pop-up style, like especially when you see like the in combat, like they're sort of like it almost kind of looks like a paper pop-up book is how the enemies kind of show up. And like there's some crazy designs, like there's these like wild bugs with these like muscular arms and big almost like scorpion tail, and there's like a pterodactyl, but his beak like goes back in some crazy horn. And like it reminds me almost like very kind of like Persona-esque in the monster design a little bit. But then the characters are very like kind of like cute anime in a good way, and like I don't know, it's just got this weird like book vibe to me, and yeah. I don't know how else to describe it, but I like the way it looks. I like the way you organize your characters, and like these three are in the front and then these three in the back, and yeah, like something about this just stands out to me.
Yeah, I agree with you too. Like the characters are like, it's an anime thing, and it's interesting comparing this to Fire Emblem because I mean, there you could say so many similar things about the designs, but and maybe it's just because we're so familiar with Fire Emblem or something, but these ones do seem a little bit more unique, whereas the Fire Emblem ones seem like they're all like really that rounded kind of, they look like gummy almost. I don't know if that's a good way to describe it, but they kind of have like that Fire Emblem archetype type of look to them.
They do look like they're made of like gummies or something.
Yeah, like I don't know. They look polished and like they're too pretty and whatnot. Like these ones look like they got a bit more grit.
Someone just took like you know when you do like a car and you like like varnish it.
Oh, polish.
These sort of look like
that.
Polish.
Yeah.
But wax it. These characters too, like they just look, there's so much personality. Like they're in really like dynamic poses. Like I've just paused on a screen of like the Buccaneers on stage, and then some girl with like a ceremonial looking dress beside him. And they're just doing like, you know, putting items on or whatever, but he's in like a very, he's going forward stabbing and he's got the eye patch and he sort of looks a little bit menacing, and she's got to look like she just lied to you or something. There's a lot of like,
she looks like she just lied to you.
But you know, like there's personality bubbling through it, these things where, so I look at the Fire Emblem characters, it's just the same dude 20 times, but he's got a different haircut. And yeah, I don't know. These ones just, they're interesting. They're dynamic. They're interesting. They look, they've got movement. Things are happening. Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should split the Etrian Odyssey collection. I feel like that would be a pretty good way to go about it. And like, we could both try this out, because I think that might be a good call. I don't know if I want to buy this for $79.99, but like $39.99, I think I'd be down.
Yeah, that's a hell of a lot more appealing. I might be in with that. I think I'm going to look up a little bit more about the game to really know what I'm getting myself into. But yeah, this definitely, I'm definitely interested in that proposition.
Okay, cool. We got a few more games to go through here. So Kirby's Return to Dream Land Deluxe coming out later this month, actually in like a couple of weeks, because Kirby has to always have at least 2 to 5 games a year. And this is just the first one. So I know people love Return to Dreamland. I know neither of us are huge Kirby people, but people love Return to Dreamland. And that, I mean, they're adding on like a whole kind of epilogue chapter. I'm sure that was probably a very cool addition for people that are like not expecting that and are big fans of the original. So like that legitimately is pretty cool. I just don't know. I don't think Kirby could really do anything to get me to be excited personally.
Disagree, because do you remember Big Mouth Mode?
Yeah, and I legitimately would like to play that game. I guess I lied. Like I would like to play what was that game called? Kirby from last year. Kirby in the
Kirby,
Forgotten Sands. That's
Kirby,
not right.
Forgotten name.
Yeah. I mean that game did look cool. These maybe I'm speaking more towards like these 2D kind of Kirby adventures.
I agree. I think Kirby's a great game, and I think it is just like for a younger audience is kind of how I look at Kirby. Like, I think Return to Dreamland looks fucking awesome, but it's just not a game as an adult that I would ever like want to go back and play. The Big Mouth mode, Forgotten Realm, I think maybe Forgotten Something, that looks interesting. It switches it up a little bit and it looks more of like a, you know,
Forgotten Land. It's the Forgotten Land.
Forgotten Land, thank you. Yeah, that one looks neat. Like, it just kind of, it's cute, it's fun, it looks like it sort of keeps surprising you, and it's 10 hours and then it's over. Whereas this looks good, but I just, there's so many, like,
so many other things to play, right? Yeah. If I'm gonna, I mean, the next one of these games on my docket is like Ori and the Will of the Wisps, or Ori and the Will of the Wisps, the second one. And like, I mean, this looks fine for what it is, but I'm not gonna be playing this over Ori. Like, come on, no chance. So after this, they revealed that yes, they are in fact adding Game Boy games, the original Game Boy, very exciting. And then after that, back to back, they revealed they're not only adding Game Boy, but they're adding Game Boy Advance to the Nintendo Online system, which is like, wow, this is great. I mean, I don't know how many of these I'm realistically going to go back and invest like a ton of time into, but there's some good hits on this collection they put out so far. We've got like Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga. There's Mario Kart, you know, Pokemon TCG is coming on the GB original Game Boy, which is like, that was a fun game back in the day. I love this era coming in, especially the GBA. It's just such a nostalgic time, I think, for both of us, like that Game Boy Advance, GameCube era, and seeing these games come back and like get a, you know, a focus like that. It's just something really nostalgic and awesome about it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. That's exactly, like, I was like, oh, Game Boy, cool. And then GBA came out and I was like, oh shit. Like, I had a moment where like, hey, compose yourself. Like, this is so exciting. Yeah. But yeah, I really think that the GBA might be like, that and the GameCube are the two most nostalgic consoles, I think, for me. Like, obviously the N64 is also huge, but I think I was just that little bit like, I didn't necessarily know about other games that we didn't own. Like, Paper Mario obviously is one of the most nostalgic games ever. Like, we played so much Smash Bros. And Mario Kart, and like, we had a ton of great games for the N64, but the GameCube and the GBA were, I think, the first kind of consoles where I was like actively like, you know, researching games, and I knew about what games were coming out and I knew which games I wanted to buy, and it was more of like an active participant choice. So it is so nostalgic, and like, yeah, they threw up some like Fire Emblem 6 is on there, so guys, don't even worry about buying the new one. You can just go hang out with Hector and Lynn and Ella with the best trinity of Fire Emblem characters.
100%. 100%. Yeah, I'm very excited to see what kind of games they add to this as they go on as well. I mean, they've put such a big library of like the N64 and SNES stuff and whatnot, and who knows if we'll ever get to something of that size. We probably will for the original Game Boy, and Game Boy Advance will give us like two games or something, but I'm really excited to see what they come out with and add to it over time. Imagine if they put FF Tactics Advance on there. Like, my God.
Oh, boy.
My God.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, very, very cool announcement, though. And speaking of another nostalgia pick, something that I actually remember quite a lot from our youth, I guess you'd say, especially the music, when the music came up in this next trailer, Metroid Prime Remaster, after being rumored for just years and years. And I can only imagine, like, I'm a big fan of Metroid Prime in general. Like, I might get this at some point. I know a couple people who've already been playing it and say it's really good. And, you know, the controls have been redone, which is nice to see. But the music of this hit me in a way I wasn't expecting to like have nostalgically. I don't know if you felt the same way, but that overworld kind of music was, yeah, like I remember it very well compared to what I thought.
Yeah, this looks great. Like, I'm so glad this exists. Huge franchise. You know, maybe it'll be evidence that Metroid Prime 4 will ever be real and come out and release and be a playable game.
Yeah, who knows about that.
Yeah, it looks great. I think the HUD in this game looks fantastic. I love that they have these spruced it up. I like the new control scheme. You now have dual sticks, which makes sense because you think about back to the GameCube, it only had one stick.
Oh my God, it's like all those people that pretend that GoldenEye is a good game still.
Oh, yeah. It's like a nightmare to control. But you know what I really love is that they've put the new control scheme and the old control scheme, and you get to choose.
So if
you
and there's even more, too. They have multiple control schemes, apparently. According to this, there's even more than those two.
Well, you know, wait till Nintendo hears about just being able to remap buttons.
Wait until that happens.
Yeah, but until that's a possibility, it's great that they have like multiple options. But at least obviously like with the sticks, that's I think a lot bigger than just being like, I want A to B, B, right? So it's certainly cool. You can play the purist version or the like, I don't hate myself version.
Yeah. Great to see this though. It's I hope this points to good things for Prime 4, but we will see. Baten Kaitos 1 and 2 HD Remaster. This is a series I know literally nothing about aside from the name, but I'm imagining people are very, very happy about this in a similar way to some of the other older games that have been brought back as remasters. Mm-hmm. And it's like a card system. Like, I think it's like a RPG where you kind of use cards to fight. Like, it does look legitimately really cool. I just don't know anything about it. We'd probably like it. But to be honest.
Probably.
How do you feel about Fantasy Life I, a girl who steals time?
Jeez. They look like Miis. That was...
That's what I thought.
The main thing I thought. A lot of Mii energy going on here. I guess it looks cute. But, yeah, it's a nice hat one of the characters is wearing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is like expanded Animal Crossing, you know, like you're making your island, you're kind of designing it the way you want, but instead of just doing the basics, you're also cooking and fighting and all this stuff. So if you're an Animal Crossing person that wants a bit more, maybe this is for you, but I just think this looks kind of not my thing, I guess.
Speaking of what could be my thing.
Now, we might have put a bug in your ear earlier that level 5 will make an appearance later on in this recap, and yes, they are, because Professor Layton makes an extremely quick appearance here with the new world of Steam, and he's not talking about the Steam Deck, everybody. He's talking about a brand new game in his franchise. You know, you see the back of his head at the start of this trailer, and you know immediately who that is with that elegant top hat and lovely coat that he's wearing. I couldn't be happier for a new Layton game. These games are just so charming. I love logic puzzles. What a match made in heaven, you know. A new mystery will begin. We don't know when it's coming. I guess it's allegedly coming this year, maybe second half. But yeah, I'm definitely going to play this. I love Layton so much. And yeah, shout out to the professor himself.
So I think the Deca Police could be the winner. But the game I am currently most excited for right now is, without a doubt, this one. This is the one I was sitting on the couch. I threw my arms up. I was like, oh, it's Professor Layton. And then what struck me now is interesting. We talked about nostalgia, right? With like the Game Boy Advance stuff coming back. And nostalgia, you always kind of associate with your childhood. But I am nostalgic for the Professor Layton games. I think I was like 22 when I played them, 23. Like, that's not usually an age you associate with nostalgia, or at least like maybe not until you're quite a bit older in life. Like, it's weird to be nostalgic for something that you did like 4 years ago.
The real question is how much time must have passed before you can be nostalgic for something.
Yeah, like, but it's very specific feeling, right? There's a lot of things where I look back on, I'm like, oh man, like I fucking like, I'll give anything to play Bloodborne again, but I'm not nostalgic for Bloodborne, right? Like, it's different. So something about, I don't know if there has to be like a charm or like an innocence to it.
Well, Layton is both of those.
He has both of those in spades. So yeah, that striking figure with the hat in the distance.
I don't think I've ever heard Professor Layton be described as a striking figure, but I guess he is.
He has a striking silhouette, okay? You put the shadow of Professor Layton up anywhere, he's recognizable.
That's true. No one's quite shaped like him.
No one is. So I'm excited. This, like, it's going to be a Layton game. It's going to be amazing. It's also really pretty. I love the art. It's very soft. Kind of like muted colors almost, but it just looks so like inviting and warm and cozy and friendly. And I hope Luke's there. We haven't seen Luke in this trailer. But when Luke shows up, he's like, Professor, a gentleman always releases his game on time. And it comes out.
question. The character from Plague Tale is also named Luke, right? Mm-hmm. Luke and Amicia. Who would win in a it's Amicia and Hugo. Who would win in a fight, Hugo or Luke? The two most pathetic characters in all of gaming.
excuse me, Hugo is an absolute badass. Hugo would
win for sure. Luke is the most innocent child in all of video games.
Luke is the cutest, most innocent. Luke is like that meme of like, I've only had Luke for 2 minutes, but if anything ever happens to him.
Oh my god. Okay, let's finish this recap. This episode is getting really long. Okay. Mario Kart 8 DLC is coming out. Yoshi's Island, that course looks pretty damn cool. Birdo's a new character. I mean, Birdo fans rejoice. I don't know too many people whose favorite Nintendo character is Birdo, but they sure exist. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is a Mario Kart service game at this point, and we'll never stop giving. And I'm excited to play this. I'm always excited for new Mario Kart DLC.
8 in Mario Kart 8 is actually just the infinity symbol, because this will go forever. And that's not a bad thing. What a fun game, Mario Kart.
It'll go forever until the new Nintendo console now, I'm pretty sure. Maybe then we'll eventually get 9, or maybe we'll just get 8 Deluxe. Who knows?
Eight deluxe remaster, revamp, ignited.
That's right. And to close out the direct, we had a new trailer for Tears of the Kingdom, probably what everyone expected here, especially since it's coming out relatively soon. And that is confirmed as well. They're not I mean, it's gone gold apparently. They've May 12th is confirmed, so we have Legend of Zelda here. Troy Baker, they had Matt Mercer doing the voiceover for this trailer. I don't know if you picked up on that.
Apparently he was Ganon, but I don't know.
Well, we don't know if that was Ganon, right? Like, was that Ganon or was it just someone else?
I'm pretty sure that was Ganon. I looked that up after because people are like, this was a weird choice. And I saw a lot of articles talking about it, but nowhere that actually confirmed it was true. So I don't know if this is like a weird internet like rumor or if it's actually legit or not.
Interesting.
But potentially. Yeah.
Now, as a non-Zelda person, I will continue to say that I think this game looks pretty cool. Like, I love the vibe of it. I think Hyrule, like, the Breath of the Wild environment was stunning to look at, especially, you know, in the context of, like, what Zelda has been before. And I just think the way they're kind of putting these dark twists on the world, and it does seem to be a bit more narrative-focused from the trailer's impressions than the first game was. I mean, I haven't played the first one. Like, I don't have any intention to play this. But, like, as a casual observer, I think this is probably the most interested I've been in a Zelda game. Based on like trailers and stuff like that. Especially like just curious to see how they're going to follow up the first game as well. Like people just love that game so much. Like people consider it, you know, game of the generation. Like, you know, it's right up there along with people's favorites in the past, like ever. So it's just cool to see how they're going to follow up a game like that, regardless how you feel about it on a personal level.
I will do my quick impression of this because this franchise fascinates me. I'm not a massive Zelda person, but I played some of the Breath of the Wild, and just especially with the reputation it now has, and I think I have a lot of thoughts on it. But basically, I'm excited for this game. I think it looks like it has a lot of potential. Breath of the Wild, to me, was a game that wasn't complete. What was in there?
People will kill you for saying that. I know. I love it.
It is so sacrilegious. But how I feel about it is I think a lot of people who played it didn't necessarily like. Oh, anyway, whatever. The point is that I think the sandbox and the physics and the world that was created for Breath of the Wild was absolutely incredible, phenomenal, stunning, a masterpiece, deserving all of the praise it was given. What was filled inside that world, I thought was very lacking in terms of like, there's three types of enemies. You know, the weapons are not really different than each other. You know, the combat felt a bit underbaked, and like the ideas of ways you can use things like rolling bombs down hills and, you know, lighting something on fire to create an updraft to get on your glider, and like you have infinite possibilities. Like the sandbox elements were amazing, but I don't think what they filled in it was enough to keep the game feeling that level of quality that it deserved for the entire experience. So to know that there's a sequel coming out and they are getting to make it in that framework and put more things into it, have larger shrines that have better, more complex puzzles in them, instead of, you know, 100 little ones, we can have, you know, maybe something a little more complex, like take all you things you have before, now put some more enemies in it, put some more variety, you know, like polish a couple of the aspects that didn't always work perfectly, and you have potentially like everything we dreamed of for Breath of the Wild could just be like 10 times better in this game, because you have the elements you need and you just get to put more pieces in that box. And this game, like, I wouldn't say I love Breath of the Wild, but I feel like I really could love Tears of the Kingdom. And I have a tentative, like, big fingers crossed for this game in the hopes it goes in the direction that I personally would like. But we'll see. I know a lot of people love just the exploration in the world being, like, big and open and kind of lonely and desolate. Whereas for me, like, I want, you know, I'd love some bigger, like, shrines and dungeons to go into with, you know, more puzzle solving and tighter combat. So we'll see. It might not be the direction I want for it, but I think this could be, like, a stellar sequel to a game that was very high highs, but some maybe potential that could have been realized a little more.
I think you articulate that really well. I think you put into context a lot of what I feel about that game in general. And I don't want to expand on it any more than that. I feel like I don't know. What else can we say? We have other things to talk about on the show, because there was one game that we've yet to talk about that was in this Nintendo Direct, which is, of course, Sea of Stars, a game which I was on record of saying is one of my most anticipated games when we did our most anticipated games show at the start of the year. And so along with being talked about in this Direct, there was also a little bit of a demo announced. I think it took me about 40 minutes to beat that. So I've played 40 minutes of a section of Sea of Stars, which I just want to say I'm thoroughly impressed by, especially considering, you know, it's sometimes hard to get a chunk of these style of games specifically into a demo, because it's like, how much do you give the player? Like, and, you know, do you start them with a bunch of moves later on in the game, or is it earlier on? But then is it too basic? Like, RPGs are hard to demo is maybe what I'm trying to say. But I was really, really impressed with this demo in a few different ways. So I've got some video of it playing up here for anyone watching on the screen. I would say this game is really doing an interesting job of modernizing what are some older style RPGs. And I know a lot of the games, like Chrono Trigger, is a really big one that gets mentioned talking about this. And I think another one that is a really big influence is like the Mario RPG series and like Paper Mario and those. And I guess I'll start talking about the combat first, because that's what's on screen right now. So the combat is similar to like the Paper Mario style in that there's action commands. So you want to hit the buttons as you're doing your attacks. And there's another move you'll see here maybe that someone's going to do where there's kind of this crescent that one of the characters shoots out. And as it comes back to you, it's kind of like a boomerang. So if you hit your button at the right time, you can make it bounce between the enemies back and forth and it gets faster. And so it's an interactive battle system, which I really like. I think that helps RPGs just so much, because it makes you interactive instead of just sitting there and not really doing much. And the other thing that makes this an interesting combat system is they have something called the lock system. And so with that crescent I'm talking about, or this other character you have, Zale, he can do like a fireball, or he's got a sword, which is like a blade weapon. And sometimes during the battles, the enemies will have these sort of roulette wheel things come up above their heads. You know, you can get like sevens on a roulette machine, but instead it'll have like three different symbols of different kinds of attacks you can do. And it'll show like, you know, a sword and a hammer and another sword. And then it'll have like a two beside it. And that basically means that before two turns tick down and they're going to use their move, if you hit them with what's shown in those boxes before they do that, it'll, if you get all of the symbols that are shown, it'll like pause their attack and stop them from attacking. Or if you hit just a couple of them, it'll weaken their attack based on how many things you checked off. So you're sort of solving little puzzles in between and like choosing like, well, I need this character. Like Zale is your healer, for example, but he also has a sword. So is it better for you to use a healing move with him or like try and take out this character's combo that's coming up? And so you're kind of making a few decisions on the fly. And I found that it really works well to, at least in the demo, make you consider a few different strategies.
That's really smart. That kind of makes me think of like the Persona system, where when you get something like super effective, you can like down the enemies, and there's that like, you know, if you down them all at the same time, that's really beneficial, but you might have to sacrifice to do it. So it's kind of like that, but I really like the idea of degrees of success. So like if you get one or two of the symbols instead of all of them, that's still like rewarded, as opposed to like, in a lot of games, it would just be an all or nothing, which feels bad when you invest into doing 80% of it, but then you don't finish it.
Yeah, 100%. And so, it's really cool in that way. And like another thing that I like about it, too, is like the MP, your MP is restored by doing regular attacks. So like, as you can see here, the MP totals are pretty low on your characters. Like they only have like, you know, 9 or 10 and their HP is in the hundreds. And so you're kind of doing a couple moves and then you are, you know, needing to do the regular attacks, but the regular attacks aren't necessarily are not a waste because they could still be the right elements to hit those different locks you're trying to get. So you're really trying to balance all these different systems. And something that's not being shown in this demo, which I realize now is I think some older footage from the game. So disregard, they might not have everything I'm talking about here, but there's also a combo system, which is like this other separate meter that builds up. And once you get enough bars in it, you can do like combo moves. So there's one that you get where like these two characters could, you know, they'll do an attack together and they'll have a blade and a property of like whatever weapon the other one has. They'll work together, and that system builds up based on like how accurate you are in your action commands, or if you it doesn't really define all the things that build that combo meter up, but it's just another thing you're managing during the game. So you're really having a lot to engage with during the combat, and it doesn't seem like one of those games where you're just gonna hammer your strongest move over and over, which is a problem I think for a lot of RPGs. And so I'm really impressed with the combat there. There was the level up system as well. It takes a lot from Paper Mario. Like it's one of those, I don't know if you've seen in the battle or if it's in this version of the demo that I'm playing here, but the experience is shared. So your party levels up. I leveled up in the demo, and each character kind of comes across the screen one by one once your party levels up, and you get to pick one of four stats that shows up above them. So do you want to increase their HP or their attack? And I like the way that it gives you choices, but it doesn't give you any choices, because in certain games, it's like, you know, I'm thinking like Elden Ring, for example, first one that came to my mind is like, there's so many stats and it's someone that's not in, like, I don't know what the fuck like Arcane it's does versus sometimes. Like, I don't know. Whereas in this game, like, you know, there is a stat list, but you know, you level up and I'm like, well, you get three choices. Do I want HP, attacks, or like defense? Well, I don't know. But I guess it's like less cognitive load on you, and that can be argued either way. Like, sure, it's not as flexible, but at the same time, like, it takes away some of that like stress of party building that can happen in these games sometimes, when you're like, oh, I need to optimize this, and like, I need to make sure my characters are all maxed. Whereas in this, you're kind of just going with the flow, and it feels a little bit more simplified. And I think that will really be an advantage, because if this is a long RPG, sometimes you get bogged down in menus too much, and just streamline that process, you know, I think it's a really good thing. And aside from that, I would just say like the art style is phenomenal. The music is great. Like, it's the stuff you'd imagine, right? Like, we say that about so many of these indie games, but the pixel art really is beautiful here. And the battle music gets ramped up really nice. I was just blown away by everything from it. Obviously, this is also a prequel to the Messenger game, which I really loved. I didn't beat it, but it was a completely different style of game. But I'm really interested to see how it ties into that game, especially with some of the surprises that kind of happened throughout the Messenger. So I think this is just, as a demo, is just reinforced. Like, yeah, I'm very excited for this. And this really could be like, you know, I don't want to go ahead and say like Game of the Year contender, but obviously, if it continues at the same level of quality, and it's the genre that I really love, and I just think this world seems to be very promising. And as long as it modernizes a lot of those like problems that RPGs can have with like grinding and all those, you know, it doesn't have any random difficulty spikes or all that type of shit that I just think ruins these type of games, this could really be something quite special.
I agree. I think this looks really neat. I think it's actually like getting a lot of everything you say about this game is like, okay, I've avoided the pitfall that this genre falls into that makes me not want to play it. Or like, okay, you've said something that's actually really cool, like action commands, puzzles in the middle of combat so they don't just like spam your best move. Or on the inverse, you never use your good moves because that wastes MP, so you just basic attack instead. And like, yeah, there's just a lot of like really small choices that feel like they're going to impact the overall experience. And like, it's just gorgeous. Like this seems like it could be a really good take of like a modern style of the genre while still keeping what, you know, kind of made them magical in the first place.
Totally agree. And there's a whole cooking thing. You can fish if you want. I just want to talk about the fishing quickly, actually, because not that I'm going to claim the fishing is great. I don't think fishing is like my favorite thing in any game, but I know a lot of people like it. And a lot of times it can be generic. This game does kind of change it up the way the fishing works. So, I mean, it's it was whatever. But you also collect like ingredients as you're going, and so your items all come from, instead of finding a potion on the ground, you kind of rest at campfires and you can combine ingredients and cook overnight. You get this like chef guy with you. So it's kind of cool, like, you know, little things to do. When you're around the campfire, the other character you have, like, she likes reading, and so she'll tell you a story or like read you something from this horror book, and so you can engage with her there. And then like another character's doing push-ups. They're all just kind of doing their own thing around the fire, and it's kind of cool. Like it adds some context, like you're not just cooking in a menu, like you're going to your chef to do the cooking at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Just little like touches, you know, that makes it feel a little bit more thought out than just something that's all in the menu. So anyway, Sea of Stars, great demo. I would recommend going in to play it. It's only like 40 minutes. If you had some time, you know, mm-hmm. give it a try. And that goes for anyone listening out there as well. So this is usually where we would do listener mail to end out the show. But of course, we checked in with our listeners at the start of the show, or not the start, partway through, to see what they thought about the mm-hmm. direct. But if you would like to get in touch with us on a later episode to ask us a question about gaming or any opinion on something like that, you can do so at Cloud Control Pod. On Twitter or at cloudcontrolpod@proton.me if you prefer the old-fashioned way in the mailbox. But yeah, fun episode, Kate. This has been a blast. Always fun to recap these directs and stuff like that, hey?
They're some of the best. It's always fun too, because you watch it, you're like, oh, that was so exciting. And then you go to recap and you're like, oh, I totally forgot about that game. Like, that was cool.
100%. So. 100%. Yeah. Yeah, this has been fun. So, yeah, I guess look out for the next Last of Us review. It should be out. Actually, you'll probably have seen it before you see this episode. So we'll continue those on as we've been doing. And next episode, unless anything changes, unless there's something that comes up unexpected, we should be potentially doing a spoiler cast on The Last of Us or talking about some lovely video game music. Those will be the next two coming up. So watch out for those. But yeah, that's it for us today. So this has been Cloud Control. Of course, the gaming podcast. It's not just good, it's good enough. And we'll see you on the next episode.